morning, and thank you all for joining the special market update heatwave Q&A session. My name is Christina Osborne with ISO Stakeholder Affairs. I'm going to be facilitating the web conference. We are going to be responding to some questions that were submitted in advance of the call, and then if time permits, at the end of the call, we'll open it up for verbal QA. So at that time, if you have a question, you can enter the queue by pressing #2. We just ask that you introduce yourself before asking your question. We are recording the session today. We will make that the video file available on the Miscellaneous Stakeholder Meetings webpage on our website. Just a reminder to please request permission from the ISO before reprinting related transcriptions. So at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Joanne Serena, who is the Executive Director of ISO Customer Service and Stakeholder Affairs, who will be kicking off the meeting.
Great. Thank you, Christina. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us on the call today, especially on short notice, but we thought it was important to host a call as soon as possible to help answer questions our customers and stakeholders have given the events of late. Thank you to many of you who have submitted your questions to us. As Christina mentioned, we've received a lot of questions about various market-related topics. So what we would like to do is address as many of those questions here today for everyone's benefit, and we'll open it up at the end for some general questions. We likely won't be able to get to all the questions that were submitted to us, but we will plan to cover those at the next regularly scheduled market update call next week, August 27th. We'll also plan on doing some published Q&A documents to get those out to make sure we address all the questions that have been coming in. I know this has been a challenging week for everyone. I think everyone is well aware of the events that have transpired since last Friday. We are certainly still in a heat wave and expect it to continue into next week. We're currently not under any warning or alert conditions, and we do not have a flex alert in effect at this time. However, convergence bidding has been suspended through today's trade day, 8/21. It has not been suspended for tomorrow's trade day, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. We have been doing extensive amounts of customer communication and outreach in an attempt to keep everyone informed of the current situation and of all the changing conditions that continue to transpire. We have been getting a lot of questions about convergence bidding, certainly. Some other areas of questions are CPM, market prices, and some other topics. So what we're going to do now is address as many questions as we can. In some instances, we've received questions that we've consolidated or that were duplicated. So you may not hear your exact precise question being asked. There's also some questions that we won't be able to answer simply because time is needed to fully analyze the details of the events and assess the results in the data. So we will address those once we do have more data and reports that we can share. So the subject matter experts that are on the call today to address questions, I have with me Guillermo Bautista Alderete. He is the Director of Market Analysis and Forecasting. We have Didi Sabakti, Director of Operations Engineering Services, and we have Phil Pettengill, Director of Regional Integration. Also joining us this morning is Mark Rothleder. He is our Vice President of Market Policy and Performance. So what I'd like to do is first get started with convergence bidding. So Guillermo, we'll start with you. One of the first questions we've received certainly is, do we have tariff authority to suspend convergence bidding? I believe the answer to that question is yes. We do have authority under the tariff to suspend convergence bidding for system reliability purposes. Is that correct?
That's correct, Joanne. We have a specific section in the tariff, that is section 7.9, which authorizes the CAISO to suspend convergence bids if there are effects to detrimentally impact the CAISO ability to operate the system reliably.
Okay, great. Thank you. So now that we've sort of set that, let's talk a little bit more into the detail of convergence bidding. So some of the questions we've received are to explain some of the benefits of convergence bids in the ISO's market, and how does it impact real time? So So if you could speak to that, please.
Sure. Thank you, Yuan. And first of all, I would like to thank you, all market participants, for working together with us in the last days to overcome these challenging conditions. And I think we have seen the good results of all this coordinated effort, and hopefully we are at the end of this period. Coming back to your question, Joanne, what is the benefit of convergence bids? Convergence bidding enables financial supply and demand positions in the day-ahead market, which are settled based on the day-ahead prices and then are liquidated in the real-time market based on the real-time prices. These positions serve to better align the day-ahead prices with the expectations of the real-time prices. Convergence bids also add liquidity to the CAISO's market. The impact of convergence bids is through the day-ahead market. Convergence bids can provide missing supply or demand that helps clear the day-ahead market, which in the end impacts the price of energy. For example, a convergence demand bid can support physical supply bids and allow the market to clear. Similarly, a convergence supply bid can support physical demand and again allow the demand bids to clear in the day-ahead market. However, because physical supply or demand is cleared under the same basis with convergence bids, they can actually displace physical supply or support additional demand and exports in the day-ahead market. This can influence how the day-ahead market positions resources towards the real-time market, which is based only on physical resources. In order to ensure the day-ahead market provides a solution that can be met with the expected conditions in the real time, the day-ahead market also has a reliability unit commitment in which the convergence bids are no longer considered and demand is met only with physical resources. When there is sufficient capacity and supply resources in the system, the positions taken in the day-ahead market can be supported. However, when the system is constrained, the position parties can take can result in schedules that will not later be feasible. For example, you can have insufficient capacity to support load and export schedules coming out of the day-ahead market, which then have to be curtailed to maintain reliability in the real time. Convergence bids is a feature of the CAISO market design and provides benefits in market efficiency and performance. However, conditions of August were of an extreme supply tightness that warrant the suspension of convergence bids as is stipulated in the tariff provisions.
So, Kimura, what were the actual reasons as to why convergence bidding was suspended in the ISO's market?
Okay. Although convergence bids provide benefits to the market, given first current temperature and system conditions experienced since August 14, the CAISO assessed the performance of the market and the interaction of convergence bids with physical resources. The CAISO noted that it was clearing export schedules in the day-ahead market that were later infeasible in the real time. Essentially, the convergence supply positions were facilitating demand schedules in the day-ahead market that the ISO may need to curtail based on what the system could actually support with physical supply in subsequent markets. In reality, the CAISO would have to possibly curtail load and export schedules in order to maintain reliability. This is the detrimental effect that we wanted to address with the suspension of convergence bids. For example, in anticipation of the ISO needing to implement load curtailments in the real time, the operators may need to cut the day-ahead export schedules that were cleared in the day-ahead market and that were supported by convergence supply. This determination was not based only on the demand level, but also in the broader perspective relative to the available supply that we have to meet the demand in the real time. To address the reliability challenge, this forces the operators to shed load as we did on August 14 and 15. I think we will discuss later with regards to the challenges of curtailing exports, but the CAISO determined that the presence of convergence bids contributed to supporting schedules that could eventually be curtailed in the real time. The CAISO determined that stopping the convergence bids from facilitating schedules that were not reliable and feasible provided the operators with fewer challenges in an already significant constrained environment. Also, it is better that the neighboring balancing areas know in advance in the day-ahead time frame and are not left to scramble in the real time to serve their exports if the CAISO happens to have to cut those in the real-time market. Coming back to the original question, Section 7.9 of the CAISO tariff allows the CAISO to suspend the convergence bids if there are conditions that detrimentally impact the CAISO's ability to operate the system. And this is the case of August 14, 15 that eventually led to the suspension on August 18.
Great. Thanks, Guillermo, for the clarification as to why we suspended the convergence bidding. Now, we also, you know, when we talk about the period and time in which we suspended, we started suspension on the trade day August 18th through today the 21st. So why did we call it for those dates on the 18th and beyond and not sooner?
Sure, and this is a very good question because it has to do a lot with the timing. There is a natural time lag in the CAISO's market time frames. The day-ahead market in which convergence bids participate is run one day in advance of the actual operating day. That is the whole reason why it's called day-ahead. Then, based on the observed conditions of a given operating day, basically you have to leave that operating day, the next natural opportunity to act on the day-ahead market is after that operating day is basically done, which is for a trading day of one more day in advance in the future. So once we could see that we were at risk of actually curtailing load and exports in the real time based on the events of August 14 and 15, we implemented the suspension of convergence bids on August 17 so that it could take effect on the day ahead running that morning for trading day August 18. So we have to make sure that we do a complete diligent assessment of the conditions to warrant the suspension because we don't take these things light. And it's the natural timing that we needed to be able to see first the effects, assess the impact, and then make the determination the soonest it could be taking effect into the day-ahead market.
Okay, thank you, Guillermo. Now, obviously, we said that convergence bidding has been suspended through today's trade date. We have not suspended it for trade day August 22nd. One of the questions was when would we reinstate convergence bidding? So we haven't suspended it for the trade date, tomorrow's trade date. But what is the criteria in terms of, I know we're analyzing this on a day-by-day basis, what's the criteria that's being used to make the decision to suspend or reinstate?
Okay, yeah. And the first day that we suspended convergence bids was for August, for trading date August 18. And since then, we have assessed on a daily basis the conditions to determine whether we continue with the suspension or we lift the suspension. The CAISO accounts for various factors in the determination of convergence bid suspension, and this is again on a daily basis. First, it considers the supply shortage that the day-ahead market is projecting when clearing against the physical supply relative to the forecast conditions that may happen in the real-time market. These forecast conditions account not only for the target load forecast that we use, but also on the uncertainty for the demand that materializes in a higher value, as well as how conditions in the current real-time market are evolving by the time the decision is being made. And as of now, we have lifted the CB suspensions for trading day August 22nd. This morning, we're going to start running the day-ahead market with convergence bids in place. And this is a good example of how the process works. So the CAISO assessed to reinstate convergence bids for August 22nd after it considered these two factors. The day-ahead projector shortage that was based on basically August 21st, that is the most recent data we have available, but also based on the evolving conditions of the load levels that we could see in the real time by the time we were making the decisions the decision basically by yesterday afternoon. And this is how we approach the daily determination.
Great. Thank you, Guillermo. So those were some of the key questions related to convergence bidding. I know there's likely others that we'll be able to get to perhaps later, but I also want to now talk about CPM. So the ISO issued a market notice for its intent to solicit and designate capacity under the CPM designation or significant event designation, specifically on Sunday the 16th. And we have since executed several CPM designations. We do have quite a few questions from customers on the process and obligations of CPM. So since we have Dee Dee on the line, Dee Dee, can you please explain sort of at a high level the process for initiating CPMs and the obligation that market participants would be under if they receive a CPM designation?
Sure. Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Joanne. You're right. We did, as indicated in the market notice, I think the market notice went out on Sunday, that California ISO did solicit the available capacity that that could be offered to us. Since then, this week, it feels like a long time, we did receive a several offer for the capacity, and we did designate all available resources under that CPM of significant event designation. So that was done both on Monday and Tuesday this week. We had a subsequent market notice that is basically published, that was published the following day, which is Wednesday. We did show that California ISO did procure 425.25 megawatt so far under the CPM. So I guess I just want to stop and say thank you. Thank you for all the effort for each one of you. I know that I talked to many of you providing that megawatt to us. It really does take a village to get us through the heat wave. Told people that every megawatt count to flatten that load curve back on Monday and Tuesday. So that's basically the significant event CPM. You also might have noticed that, Joanne, in addition to that significant event CPM, we also did a bunch of exceptional dispatch CPM during the heat wave. So this is actually a little bit different than the significant event. So when you see the market notice, you will see two types of market notice. One is for the significant event, CPM, and the other is for exceptional dispatch, CPM. So that comes in a two separate market notice when we do that. There are some similarities in those both CPM term are actually 30 days term. People were asking what the difference. Well, the term is pretty similar. Now, there is a little bit difference. For example, when you do receive that exceptional dispatch CPM, what you will see is that your scheduling coordinator and your resource get ED, right, that the exceptional dispatch. At the same time, you will or you should get a notification from CIRA. That is our RA customer interface for California ISOs after that initial designations. And when you get that initial notifications, you should review it. Ideally, you should if you are not there yet, if you should subscribe to CIRA. That way, if you subscribe to CIRA, there's an email notification that get automatically sent out when an ED CPM actually occur. So when you do receive that type of a notification following that ED, we really want you to review that ED. Because you do have the ability to decline that ED CPM initial designations. So if you want to decline it, you have to decline it in CIRA within 24 hours of that initial designation. If you don't decline it, then what we do is by default, or it's assumed, or I guess it's deemed to be accepted. So that is very important to do that. When you do accept the CPM, either a significant event CPM or ED CPM, that means that you have that obligation like any other RA unit, like any other resource adequacy unit. That obligation if we do this, which is what we did through for a system need, that obligation is a 30-day commitment. Now, one thing to note, there's many questions here that people are asking me, but hey, you know, I get a CPM, ED CPM or significant CPM, and that CPM capacity is actually above the net qualifying capacity. There were a number of people asking about why is that CPM above NQC? Well, it's because, you know, every megawatt counts. We want as much megawatt as we can. And the tariff actually allow CPM above the NQC number. And again, if you have the ED CPM, you have the ability to accept that CPM capacity above the NQC. Now, if you do receive that capacity that is above NQC, you need to know, and please note that once you receive that CPM capacity that is above NQC, you are also obligated to provide that amount of capacity that is above NQC. If you believe that you cannot commit that capacity number for that 30-day commitment, you have 24 hours to decline that CPM. Again, that's kind of like the normal process. I'm making sure that if you have an initial destination through the ED process, you have 24 hours to decline it. There is a very interesting nuance here because the CPM destination occur on the August 17 and 18. So this is treated very similarly with other intra-month CPM. One that is unique in there, you can be CPM for 30 days, but then you already have an increased amount of RA commitment shown for the following month, which is the month of September. That's okay. We have a tariff provision for that, and it basically says that the CPM destinations will be reduced for September by the same amount of the increased RA commitment. So if you have an increased amount of RA commitment already shown in September, the CPM destinations for September then will be reduced. That way, we would not obligate you into capacity that is not achievable. In summary, really, that's kind of like the process, Joanne. There are some similarities between those two type of CPM. You will see those two type of CPM, and you should be able to see it in CIRA for both situations. We will be posting designations and the cost and all that good stuff in accordance with timing that is stated in a tariff. So I believe that all this for the August 17th and 18th should be out there by September 10. So that would be my update on there, Joanne.
Great, thank you, Vivi. Yeah, so if I could mention as well, I have seen that the market notices are being posted that indicate what CPMs have been issued and accepted. We're starting to see those come out at this point. Thanks, Dee Dee. Okay, another area that we're receiving quite a few questions on is imports and exports. In particular, on the export side, the questions around export curtailments. So over the course of this week's events, we did reach out to those SCs that had export schedules. We, to the best of our ability, certainly gave a heads up to our scheduling coordinators to give them an early warning that there was a potential for exports to be cut, depending upon system conditions. So I'm going to go back to Guillermo. Guillermo, can you kind of give us a little bit of background as to why curtailments were cut and why did they start on Monday, August 17th? What was the deciding factor there?
Sure. This is quite a broad question, and I think that we need to tackle in different pieces. First, in the past, we have curtailed exports. Curtailing exports is not a new practice that we started on August 17. For August 17 and onward, we simply took the extra measure of reminding the market that exports could be subject to curtailments based on the priorities that we have defined in the market. And that was due to the increased likelihood to happen given the ongoing system conditions. Second, exports, like any other type of resources, namely generating resources of any type of technology or imports or demand, can be curtailed in the market clearing process. These curtailments can be driven by either of two reasons. One reason is due to power balance constraint, an imbalance between supply and demand, and the second reason could be due to congestion management. For the first reason, for power balance, it can happen in either of two directions. When there is too much generation, we have an oversupply condition and we have to curtail generation and import. When there is little supply, we have an undergeneration condition and we have to curtail demand and exports. The third component here is that curtailment can be implemented through two different mechanisms. One mechanism, that is the standard mechanism, is through the market clearing process. But there is a second process, and that is based on the CAISO's operator doing directly the curtailment. Let me start explaining first the curtailment done through the market clearing process. The CAISO curtails exports and imports self-scales, which are effectively price-taker bids, at intertides through the CAISO market when the market has to relax constraints to clear. If there is enough supply or the transmission is not constrained, the CAISO normally honors all these self-scales because we have sufficient space to accommodate all this, including the export self-scales. But if things become constrained, either on power balance or transmission limits and binding, the market system will begin curtailing self-scales in a priority fashion, including the self-scale exports. When the market curtails exports, the software is configured to follow a set of priorities. Certain exports have a higher priority than others, so it is possible that not all exports get curtailed before the CAISO is able to clear the market. For example, in the day-ahead market, if the CAISO must curtail self-scales, the CAISO will treat CAISO demand self-scales at the same priority that it treats export self-scales that the scaling coordinator has explicitly identified in an array plan to serve array capacity explicitly. The CAISO will also treat export self-scales that are explicitly identified by the scaling coordinator as sourced by a non-array capacity at the same level of priority. On the other hand, export self-scales that are not explicitly identified as sourced by non-array capacity will have a lower priority and will be curtailed before the other types of self-scale exports. This means that if in the day-ahead market we run into infeasibilities, the export self-scales will be cut with this level of priorities, going from the lowest priority up to the highest priority based on the level of curtailment that we have to accommodate. Now, when we go into the real-time market, we follow similar priorities. If the real-time market runs into infeasibilities, it will also curtail real-time submitted self-scales like in the day ahead. The real-time market will treat certain exports with a higher priority. For example, if the market needs to increase supply because it is short on supply to meet power balance constraint or transmission constraints binding, the system will allow an infeasibility to meet the CAISO load and curtail export self-scales that are identified with generation that is from non-array capacity. Again, the export self-scales that are not explicitly identified as offered by generation from non-array capacity or not offered by generation from non-raw capacity will have a lower priority than load and this other type of exports. Therefore, market participants are aware, because this is not new. This is the mechanism that we have used in the market since we launched the nodal market back in 2009, and shouldn't be surprised that export self-scales may be curtailed. These types of curtailments don't happen quite frequently, but when they do, and they happen before August 17, there are mechanisms for the participants to realize they are being curtailed. Regarding how frequently or how much we have curtailed in recent days, I don't have the numbers in front of me. Obviously, we have a lot of analysis to do, and we're collecting and analyzing all the data. But we did see intervals in the recent days in which there were infeasibilities, and we have to do curtailments of self-scales. Now, again, this is only the first part, that is the curtailments of exports and other type of resources through the market. The second mechanism that I indicated is when the operators have to do the curtailments. System operators may take out-of-market actions to curtail SKUs, whether they are price taker SKUs or not. And this is obviously with the purpose of maintaining system reliability. These actions will only be taken for system reliability, and they are carried out by our system operators. Although they have tools to assist them in making these decisions, system operators have the ability and authority to curtail SKUs based on what they will need to address the reliability event. However, such actions are often done during extreme conditions, and the operators may not have the ability to ensure that the same level of priority may be always be the same. There is also something to consider. When system operators conduct such actions, the operators will assess and curtail the scales pro rata, or will conduct the curtailments that are more expedient and effective to resolve the reliability challenge. The operators would only curtail exports if the ISO finds itself in a situation where it is also curtailing or expects to curtail its own load. The CAISO rarely curtails its own load, as you know, and therefore rarely curtails exports. Curtailing exports has to be carefully considered, especially due to the unintended consequences when operating in the real time. And even when the CAISO must curtail its own load in order to maintain reliability, it has to ensure it can serve the most load possible given the conditions. And there are certain conditions that play similarly for August 14 and 15. As you know, we have to do the curtailment. However, after that, and once we knew we were in a situation that could lead us to cut load, we started putting market participants on notice that they may need to anticipate cutting exports. That is why we started sending notices that this could be possible. We just simply wanted to let know people that had exports scheduled that they could potentially be curtailed by the market as described before, or by the operator if they need to do that. I understand that there were questions regarding why the CAISO didn't issue a broader notice of export curtailments. We notify market participants that had export schedules that they may be curtailed. We target specifically those scheduling coordinators because we understand that market participants are aware of these curtailments may happen because we rarely do the curtailments of exports. So we just wanted to have this extra communication with the scheduling coordinators that may be impacted in these days. So let me pause here.
Yep, thanks, Guillermo. In terms of the broad notice of export curtailments, I think that is something that we can certainly consider as improvement and adding to our communication moving forward. So we'll take that under consideration. But yes, we did do the outreach to specifically to SCs that had received export schedules, or that had received export schedules, that's correct. Okay, thank you for that detailed explanation. I would like to touch a little bit on forecasting. I know that forecasting is typically somewhat challenging and certainly challenging throughout this period of supply constraint conditions. So can you please provide some insight as to the nature of, you know, the significant load reductions that were observed on specifically on the 17th and the 18th?
Sure. I think in addition of the normal considerations that we do for forecasting, we got some questions related to the pattern in which the load realized in the real-time market was below the projected forecast. There were three main components that play a role in this outcome. The first one is obviously that we have demand response activation. You know that we call for demand response and we trigger reliability demand response. That, together with the energy efficiency, which is the flex alert, play a big role in basically diminishing the load level. And on top of that, for these days, as you may see, you are located here in California, you may relate very much to what I'm indicating about the weather. It has been changing quite a lot. And there was a temperature error for the August 17 and 18 that also play a role because obviously the load forecast heavily depends on the temperature forecast. If the temperature forecast has an error, that is going to is going to transpire into the load forecast. So for these 2 days, we also have the error in temperature in both areas, in the PG&E and the SCE area, that were coming lower than expected. And this is really what materialized in this much lower level of demand observed for hours 17 and 18.
Okay, thank you for that, Guillermo. Anything else that you would like to cover on forecasting, or should we go ahead and move to prices since we have quite a few questions around prices?
Well, I think we also want to thank to not just the market participants, but also to all the people of California. Obviously, the conservation communication was quite aggressive, and we saw the benefits, and we saw how the people reacted to the calls for the energy conservation. We are thankful for that because that relieved a lot of pressure on the system. I think with that, we can just really move to the other questions, John.
Okay, great. Yeah, just to emphasize on the conservation front, we do feel that there was some significant conservation that really did help us in this situation. So the call to consumers, the call to our market participants and all our stakeholders to help us through this event was really significant, and it was noticed in the load reductions that we observed. And we certainly thank all our market participants, the CEC, the CPC, the Gov's office, our demand response folks, all those individuals really came together to help us reduce that load. I'm sure I'm missing people as well, but utilities, all our market participants really stepped up to really find ways to help us through, give us the megawatts that we needed, or reduce the load. So a huge thanks to everybody that helped make this happen. All right, so with that, let's turn to prices. So we saw some volatility in pricing. So we've got a number of questions here. The first one, Guillermo, is what is the price cap used in ISO's market, and why has it been raised under these conditions?
Sure. Let me first state that the CAISO doesn't have a price cap. The price can take the value that is deemed necessarily based on the clearing process. However, what we have is an energy bid cap, and that is $1,000 per megawatt hour. And this bid cap is what effectively limits to a great extent how high a participant can bid in the CAISO markets. And also, it's going to influence greatly the resulting market prices that we have in the system, not just based on the bids, but also on the overall system conditions that we observe from that specific market, such as congestion, or other operational conditions. Bid caps are $1,000, but prices may actually exceed the $1,000. And a very typical scenario is when you are short of supply, basically you are reaching the end of the bid stack, you are potentially reaching the $1,000 price, and compounded with that, we may have congestion that can add or subtract to that price. So once you have these two conditions, the price can really go above the $1,000. The $1,000 bid cap is defining the tariff. This is not a value that changed dynamically. It's set and fixed. The CAISO didn't lift the bid cap under this period. It remains at $1,000. The provisions to allow bid caps to raise up to $2,000 are not in effect yet. This is still under discussion through a policy initiative. And even if it was in place on this time, the conditions for these prices to be allowed as bid have to be justified based on fuel cost. It's not just because of a condition of limited supply.
Okay, so now, given that, why is power pricing confidential, and how can consumers be assured that prices aren't being manipulated in our market?
Yeah, there are two components here. First, the prices are not confidential. CAISO posts prices just in time, as frequently as every 5 minutes for the real-time interval dispatch market, and that is available through the OASIS portal that is publicly available. Any party can access that information. The calculation of prices, however, is done through a robust clearing mechanism, and that is the market clearing process that is run by the CAISO, which relies on a very sophisticated market optimization algorithm. The details of this mathematical formulation are available through different documentations we have created over the years. Much of that is actually contained in the business practice manuals and the many policy initiatives that we have discussed over the years about the specifics of constraints and features, market products in the market. The CAISO market also has a module, which is the market power mitigation module, and that is for the identification and mitigation of local market power. Currently, there is also an ongoing policy effort to further improve that mechanism for system market power, the identification and the mitigation. On top of that, on a normal business practice, we closely validate all prices generated in the market and identify the conditions that are setting those prices. On top of that, the competitiveness of the markets and the prices are also very closely monitored by the Department of Market Monitoring. So we have a lot of safety guards to ensure that the market remains competitive and is working efficiently.
Now, we've also had quite a few questions, Guillermo, about EIM and how the EIM sort of factors into this equation. So in particular, does the flexible ramp test that applies to the CAISO BAA, and how did it perform during the August 14th and 15th timeframe?
Yes. As you know, we have the energy imbalance market in place since 2014. And as part of that imbalanced market, we have a process that ran prior to the actual imbalanced market, that is the resource sufficiency test. One of those components is what we call the flexible ramp sufficiency test. And that test applies to each balancing area, and that includes the CAISO. The purpose of this test is to ensure that each EIM area has the sufficient capability to meet its own flexible ramp requirement. If an area fails the test, the market is going to cap the EIM transfer allowed to flow into that area from the rest of the system, and that area will have to meet its own system needs with its own resources. This means the demand in that area has to be met with the area's own resources for supply. And again, this is achieved by capping the EIM transfers of the failed area to the advisory EIM transfers. When an area fails the test, the EIM transfers do not drop to zero. They simply get capped to, that basically means a maximum limit that matches the most recent value that was obtained in the transfers. So if 10 minutes ago the transfer was 1,000 megawatts, now when the entity is on a failure, that is the maximum import that the entity can bring. Again, it doesn't drop to zero. It simply imposes an upper limit of how more additional transfers can bring. For the CAISO case, in addition to the AM transfers, we also have the HAS market, as you know. So on August 14 and 15, the ISO BA area basically failed the flexible ramp test in a few intervals, because at the end of the day, the genesis of all this complication was limited supply. And this resulted in capping the AM transfers with other areas to the values that have been observed in the previous intervals before the failure.
Okay, so now did the EIM market help the CAISO situation on 14th and 15th?
Oh, yes. On these days, the EIM transfer between CAISO and other areas were generally a net import into the CAISO, which means the CAISO received EIM import transfers during the late hours of the day. I can tell you that there were transfers anywhere between the range of 1,100 up to 1,500 megawatts on August 14 and between 600 and 1,100 megawatts on August 15. This was additional energy the CAISO area had through the EIM balancing market in the real-time market.
Okay, so based on that, let's kind of talk a little bit more about prices just over the last couple of days. I know that you've got a lot of price scenarios to explore and your team's looking at that, Guillermo. But do you have any insight over the last few days? What's been occurring with our price signals?
Oh, yes. As you know, there are many markets that we have. We generate prices for every interval. Therefore, there are many conditions to explore. And we do the diligent validation of every single price that is financially binding. In a week, obviously, there are many conditions and cases to explore. Let me just provide a glance to different aspects impacting prices. First, we know that we have tight supply conditions. This was experienced in the system, and this is the reason of all this discussion. Naturally, we expect that the prices will rise to a higher level just because of the limited supply. Effectively, we're going up to the end of the bid stack. Second, in the last week, we observed pronounced price separation between the north and the south parts of the system, and this is reflected in price separation for the PG&E and the SCE areas. Congestion generally depressed prices in the PG&E area and increased prices in the SCE area. In the SCE area, prices reached prices up to $1,500 per megawatt hour, while prices in PGE may have been below $500. There are multiple constraints causing such price separation. For instance, in certain days, and this is mostly observed on the first days, August 14 and 15, we have constraints such as Midway Vincent or Midway Willow Wind. These constraints, if you have a physical feeling where they are relocated in the backbone of the system. And when they are congested, they will naturally split the system between the north and the south. And this is exactly what happened. If people pay attention for the escalating point prices, for instance, Malin, Palo Verde, Knob, they are going to see that in some cases, Malin and Knob were congested in the import direction. I have to know that in these days, Malin actually was derated, and therefore it has less capacity, and that raises the frequency of congestion on that constraint. When it comes to the peak time of the day, we observe high prices in both the day ahead and the real-time markets. In some cases, it's reaching the $1,000 price. That is the natural ceiling that we're going to reach, simply because we are putting upward pressure on the bid stack as we run out of supply capacity. We also experienced some ancillary service scarcities around the same hours, and that was mainly for non-spinning reserves, which effectively triggers the scarcity mechanism that we have. As we move towards this week, there was another component, and that is gas prices. The gas prices start to increase fairly from day to day. They went from $4.4 on Friday to $6.4 on the weekend on Monday, then jumped to $13 on Tuesday to come back to $6 on Wednesday. As everybody knows, we have several gas-based generation. And if gas prices increase, naturally, the electricity prices are going to increase. So just to put in a nutshell, if you put all these three factors, limited supply, meaningful congestion, and higher gas prices, you have a good recipe for prices to be high and volatile in the system.
So, Guillermo, before we go to the phones, we do want to take a couple of calls. I have one last, just real quick question. It's around administrative pricing. Does administrative pricing apply under emergency conditions?
Yeah, and this is a very interesting part because obviously we know that we have an emergency in the system that is on the operational side. We have provisions that we work in a policy a few years back of what to do when we have this type of events in the system. But I need to differentiate between the system events and the market events. We did not trigger administrative pricing when we have to declare the emergency in the system. One of the conditions for applying administrative pricing is when the CAISO market gets suspended as a whole. We suspend the day-ahead market or we suspend the real-time market, but it has to be suspended. in order for the administrative pricing to kick in. During the system emergency of the CAISO, both the day-ahead and the real-time market continued to operate. And they provided market solutions, we generated dispatches, we generated financially binding prices. Therefore, the market was operating as usual. And therefore, there is no need or there is no condition to trigger the administrative pricing. Obviously, the resulting market prices are financially binding, and they are like any other price in any other period, subject to the standard provisions of price corrections. Let me pause here.
Okay, thanks, Guillermo. I know it's been a lot of information to sort of pass along and absorb, but we do want to see if we can get a couple questions on the phone now. So I do want to mention we've had a number of media briefings for media, so I'd like to give this opportunity for stakeholders to ask some questions. So, Christina?
Great. Yeah, so I know we have a couple of folks in the queue, but just a reminder, if you want to ask a question, you can raise your hand by pressing pound 2, and we just ask that you identify yourself first. So, Will, we'll go to the first caller, please.
All right, your line's been unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Steve Maestranzi with Active Power. And I was just going back to the first topic about convergence bidding, and I was curious if you believe you would have seen the same issues related to convergence bidding if you had removed the $1,000 bid cap, which would have allowed more demand bids to clear in the day-ahead market.
Well, let me come back to the basics. And we know that the main conditions that we have for this period of time is limited supply. We basically go after every single megawatt that was available in the system. Granted, if you have prices, we don't know what will happen, but we don't want to speculate what if we increase the price higher and higher. What we know for a fact is that there was limited supply.
Okay, Christina, next question.
All right, everyone's been unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Duncan Ryan with Teos Capital. I just had, I guess, a couple of questions more related to going forward, trying to predict days when convergence bidding might be suspended again. I guess if I look at the CAISO dashboard right now, it says there's about 50 gigawatts of available capacity. The last few days, I guess if we look at today, I believe the CAISO load forecast is about 45.7. So I guess they're, you know, I guess how much are you taking into account the possibility of forecast error? And is there kind of some kind of threshold that you're kind of targeting? And I know there is convergence bidding for trade day tomorrow, but there was a notice that went out about an hour earlier that said it was suspended even for tomorrow when load forecast is about 39.2. So that would have been surprising. I'm glad it was reversed, but I guess is there any guidance in terms of criteria that will be used to kind of make these decisions in the future, I guess looking at capacity versus demand forecast?
Yeah, and the first part is why we reversed direction in the notice that we issued yesterday. You may realize that this is not black and white. There are many factors at play that we have to assess, and one of those is how the peaking load conditions were developing yesterday afternoon. So after we realized that the loads were coming lower than projected, and that gives us more confidence that, among many other things we consider, that would be enough to stop the suspension of virtual bid. There is no recipe to say if you meet A and B, we are going to suspend the virtual bids. We have to go back to the basics, and that is we do have a physical problem. No amount of convergence bids is going to help us to get over that physical limitation that we currently have. So the assessment that we have to do has to consider at the end of the day how the physical supply plays a role with the physical demand that we have. And it's both. It's not just how high your demand is, but also how much supply you have to support that demand.
Okay. So, yeah, so is there 50 gigawatts? Yeah. Is there 50 gigawatts of supply today?
Sorry, what is the question?
is there 50 gigawatts of supply today?
Capacity-wise, we're indicating that you have to realize the operation in the real time change quite dramatically. Resources may be offline by force outages, and supply conditions change quite dramatically, and this is one of the factors that play a role in the determination.
Yeah, I think if I can just add to that, Duncan, it's a very fluid situation, and so certainly things are changing rapidly in real time. So I think our assessment on a day-to-day basis, we've tried to give warning as much as we can, but things do change rather quickly, as we saw yesterday. Okay, I think we are very close to being out of time. We can probably take one more question.
All right, your line's been unmuted. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Charlotte from Wood Mackenzie, and I just wanted to ask about why congestion was so much stronger in day ahead than real time. For example, on Tuesday, it was a $580 on-peak spread, but I know gas was higher that day, but is there anything else going on there besides the gas price?
We would have to check specifically the day, the interval you're referring to. I don't want to speculate right now. So once we complete the validation, we can elaborate more on the subsequent market update calls.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the question. All right, so we are essentially out of time. In summary, I just wanted to mention a few key points. I know there's still a lot of questions about convergence bidding. Our goal is to give notice prior to the day ahead as much as possible, so we'll continue to do that. I also do want to stress that, our current conditions really indicate that, a supply issue, not a renewable issue, but really constrained conditions due to lack of supply. And we do really sincerely appreciate everybody's conservation efforts to help us remedy this situation. We've had tremendous response for customers, from consumers, from stakeholders, really across the board. And we really appreciate everybody coming together and helping us manage through this very challenging times. And I know that the times continue to get even more challenging. We have fires now, especially here in Northern California, that we're faced with. So everybody's going through quite a bit of difficulty, and we appreciate everybody coming together to get through this. We will work on addressing more questions. We're going to have the market update call next week where we'll address some of these. We are working on putting together a document that outlines many of these questions that we can publish for everybody to access. I really do appreciate everyone joining today. Hopefully you found this Q&A dialogue helpful. Given the challenging times, especially with the pandemic and now fires, I hope everyone stays safe and well. Thank you very much.
That concludes our conference. Thank you for using AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.